Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. There's no doubt that the benefits of charitable giving can make the holiday season that much more special. This is a time when many people give to organizations that support their communities and the causes they believe in most. Charitable giving can help the greater good by ensuring crucial services are maintained for the people who need them. And nonprofit organizations depend on those donations to promote their programs and help them fulfill their missions. But whether you contribute out of a sense of duty or to give back to the community or because a particular cause matters to you or someone you care about, it's important to take a strategic approach to year-end giving to make sure those dollars are spent wisely and have the most positive impact. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. At the end of the year, many people are making their final decisions on which organizations to support and just how much to give. Today, we delve into the do's and don'ts of charitable giving with the help of Kevin McKinley. He's owner of McKinley Money LLC, an independent registered investment advisor with offices in Madison and Eau Claire. And he is also the author of the book, Make Your Kid a Millionaire. Kevin, welcome back to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm glad to be back.
Well, we're glad to have you. And we are glad to take questions as well from listeners. You can join the conversation by calling us with your questions at 800-780-9742. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Kevin, I want to start by talking about the benefits of charitable giving and why it makes sense from a tax perspective to give, or maybe doesn't it always?
Yeah, that's usually the first thing people think about, are what are the tax benefits of giving to a qualified charitable organization. And, you know, that's obviously a good motivation for it. But a lot of people don't actually qualify for the tax deduction, in part because we usually have to itemize our deductions to get an actual charitable tax deduction for it. Plus, you can only deduct a percentage of the given amount based on what you're giving and to what kind of organization. So, and then finally, you have to find a very qualified 501c3 usually that does allow you to give money to them and receive a tax deduction for it. So it's certainly a good motivation, especially for larger amounts and for people who have a lot of itemized deductions. But because the standard deduction is so high, most lower to middle income people usually don't have enough deductions to offset that, the size of the standard deduction.
So if many people aren't going to get any tax break out of it, what are some of the other reasons that people give? I mean, if tax reduction isn't the primary goal for those people, what is it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's because people want to help, and especially the kinds of people who are listening to this show right now are generally very benevolent people, and they are community-minded, and they want to help out wherever they can. And there is several studies that have been published, especially around this time of the year, that show that giving to other people feels good. There is an adrenaline rush that you get when you help someone out, and they found that there's even a higher correlation between helping out people further away from you, meaning that, you know, if you help a child out or whatever, you know, get their car fixed for them or something, that's great. It feels good. But when you give to a complete stranger, it actually makes people feel better than when they're giving it to someone they know, like a friend or a family member. And so it just feels really good to do that and know that you can help out. You've been maybe more fortunate than somebody else. At this particular life, you have the opportunity to help them out. There's definitely a good feeling to that. And people actually get a higher kind of an adrenaline rush, if you will, out of giving money to strangers than they do on spending it on themselves.
Sure. I can understand that. It does feel good to give money. I mean, no matter whether you're going to get a benefit from it or not, sometimes it even feels better if you know you're not going to get anything out of it. So there's that. You mentioned a couple moments ago about a very qualified 501c3. So what kinds of requirements are there for that to happen, for an organization to become tax exempt and allow that kind of deduction available?
It's a lot of work for the organization, and that's generally why the smaller the organization is, the less likely that they just have the person power needed to not only establish that, but also maintain it properly as well. And so the good thing to do when you do find an organization that you want to help is to check with them and say, hey, just wanted to see, are you a qualified 501c3? And if so, you know, where are your legal documents? Just so I can make sure that I don't get in trouble by giving money to you and then taking the tax deduction. If I get audited later, they're going to want to say, how did you know for sure that this was deduction? Generally, the larger the charitable organization, the more likely it is that they qualify. But you can go to a website like guidestar.org and look up all different kinds of nonprofits to see if they are indeed qualified to receive the charitable deduction.
Talk a little bit about what are some ways that people can donate money and reduce their taxable income. What are some strategies here?
Yeah, there's lots of different ways to do it still. And you know, the tax code is allowing us more and more opportunities to give you money. You can just obviously just give cash. Every charity out there will gladly take a cash or a check or an automatic payment or whatever. But there also is the qualified IRA distribution. And that still exists. It kind of gets caught up in legislation on a year-to-year basis, so people never know whether it's going to continue or not. But this year it does stand, where people over the age of 70 and a half, instead of taking their taking a distribution from their IRA, they can donate the IRA tax-free directly to a qualified organization. And that's nice because you can give $3,000 or $4,000 or something like that directly from your IRA. And even if you don't itemize, the money still is not taxable to you. And again, it's got to go directly from the IRA custodian to the charity. So don't try to take a check out and then donate a similar amount in kind to the charity. It has to go from one jar to the other without ever entering into your hands. That's a great way to do it. You can also donate securities. That's a really smart thing to do for people who have like a small position in a stock or a mutual fund that's held outside of a retirement account, where you may have bought this or it was a spinoff of a company 25 years ago and you don't even know the cost basis of it. If you go ahead and sell it, you have to guess the cost basis, or the IRS requires you to use zero as the cost basis and pay taxes on the entire capital gain amount.
Mm-hmm. What about donating shares and stocks? I mean, what is that a smart thing to do?
Absolutely, especially in the case we're just talking about, where you've got these 9 shares of some spinoff company. You want to get rid of it just to kind of clean up your portfolio. You can give those shares to a qualified charity. You get a deduction for it as long as you qualify for it. And the great thing is you don't have to calculate the cost basis. So let's say you have $3,000 of this little mutual fund or stock or something, again, held outside of an IRA or a Roth IRA or a 401k. You can contact the charity and donate the shares to them in kind, and then you get a break on the value of the shares, but you don't have to figure the cost basis. And usually the charitable organization will then sell the security so that they can use the proceeds for their whatever their mission is. And most charitable organizations already have a mechanism in place to receive it and then sell it. And again, all you have to do is call them up and say, I have something of value for you, and they will scramble to make sure that they not only take it in, but do it properly.
Number to call with questions for Kevin McKinley, 800-780-9742, as we continue our discussion on strategic charitable giving on Wisconsin Public Radio. Tell us a little bit about donor-advised funds. I've been hearing a lot more about these lately.
Yeah, I absolutely love these, and it's one of the favorite things our clients use. They just speak really highly of not only how good it feels to put money into this, but also to take money out of it. And how they work is it's a little like kind of a miniature foundation that you can set up and control to a great deal. You deposit money or assets right now. You can put cash into it, and you can also put appreciated assets or stocks or mutual funds, whatever you'd like to do. And then you get a tax break now on the deposit when you put it into the donor advised fund. And then there are probably usually about a half dozen to a dozen different investment options within the donor advised fund that you can choose from that are, you know, based on aggressive portfolios, conservative portfolios, et cetera. And then when you decide to give money to a qualified charity, you can direct that money to be sent from the donor advised fund to the charity. So let's say you put $5,000 into the donor advised fund right now. You get a tax break for the 2022 tax year. But that might be your kind of your pocket for future donations to qualified organizations, and you can set it up online so that you can go to your donor advised fund and say, I'd like to give $50 to this organization. And the custodian of the donor advised fund, it's usually a larger mutual fund company or financial services company like Schwab or Vanguard or Fidelity, but there are a lot of different community-based or charity-based donor advised funds as well. They'll approve it or disapprove it, and they'll almost always approve it, especially if it is a qualified charity. But then they'll approve it. You click a button, and $50 goes to your favorite organization, and then you can do it again next year in the future if you want. Under today's laws, you're not required to give any money of that any amount of that money out at any given time. So if you say for whatever reason I need to get a big tax break this year, so I'm going to donate a larger sum to my donor advised fund, in future years you might be in a lower tax bracket, and that's when it makes sense to take money out of the donor advised fund and have it sent to a qualified charity, because when you do that at that point in the future, you don't get the tax break on the money.
Interesting. Is a donor advised fund different from a donor network? I hear both of those things when I'm talking.
Yeah, the donor advised fund is a specific jar that's held by a custodian that you would donate from if and when you see fit to what organizations qualify, but that you'd also see fit, and you're not required to do that. And that's also attractive to people who say, you know, I don't know if I want to give this amount of money out all in one lump sum, all right at the end of the year. I'd rather keep it kind of ready, and so I can decide to switch organizations in the future, or I can say, you know what, your mission has moved away from something that's important to me, so I'm not going to give any more money out of my donor advised fund. I'm going to switch it to another organization or not give it at all.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about budgeting for giving. How do people know how much they can afford to give? What do you recommend?
Yeah, that's tricky. And it's really part of like a larger financial plan where you can say, okay, am I going to have enough money to last at least as long as I do and cover all of my future spending and for those people about whom I care and want to take care of them. And so that's the first step to it. It's just analyzing your financial situation. A kind of a quick and easier way to do that, especially if you're retired, is to say, all right, how much money do I have? What's my pot? What's my overall investment amount? And then divide that amount by the number of months you expect to live. And that's the amount that you can either spend next month or give away or whatever. So let's say you have $100,000 and you expect to live for 200 more months. Well, you can give away or spend $500 this month above and beyond Social Security or a pension or anything like that you have. And that's kind of it takes a lot of the guesswork out of planning for spending and for giving, is because you don't have to figure out, returns and inflation and everything like that. You only have to come up with one number, and that's your estimated life expectancy.
What about budgeting for people who don't have $100,000. They don't have this money. You know, they're operating on a kind of a paycheck to paycheck basis, but they still want to make a difference. So what about budgeting for those smaller donations?
That's a kind of the other side of the spectrum of saying, okay, rather than tracking my liquid assets, how much I have, I'm going to start tracking my expenses. And obviously, if your income is exceeding your expenses, you can afford to give away the surplus, especially if you're already saving for retirement. And, you've got all your debts paid down. You know, there's a phrase that says charity begins at home. And if you have a large credit card balance that you're paying 18 or 22% on it, and it's hurting your credit rating, the best place to give charitably is to pay that account down first, because that not only saves you a lot of money and interest, but it helps your situation as well. Another way to do it, though, is once you look at all of your expenses and say, all right, this is what I spend every single month, and I just kind of barely cover things with my paycheck, see if you can cut out one non-necessity to give that difference to your favorite organization or people. For instance, let's say you buy a cup of coffee at the barista's every morning. Well, you could say, you know what, I'm not going to buy coffee for a month. And if I were spending $5 a day on that times 30 days, that gives me $150 this month that I can give to a different organization. And then when the month's over, I'll go back to my caffeine fix.
Mm-hmm. Financial advisor Kevin McKinley is here giving advice as we continue our discussion on smart charitable giving choices on Route 51. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to vet the organizations you choose to support to ensure your money is going to a reputable cause. We're taking your personal money questions, too. You can join us at 800-780-9742, or you can email us ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Financial advisor Kevin McKinley is our guest today as we continue our discussion on making the most of year-end giving. So what's on your mind? You can email us, ideas@wpr.org, or call us at 800-780-9742 with your personal money questions. Kevin, I'd like to talk a little bit about how to find reliable information on which organizations to support. I'm bringing this up for a reason. My stepdad died earlier this year, and I filed his income taxes for him and for my mom, and they had this big stack of notes in an envelope that showed all the causes they gave to the year prior. But when I went through them, I found out that only a very small portion of those were actually nonprofit organizations. They clearly thought they were. So how do we know that the organization we're giving to is actually a nonprofit?
Well, the first thing you can do is ask them, and most of them will be very honest about their statuses of whether or not they are a true tax-qualified nonprofit. The second thing you can do is go to a website like charitynavigator.org or charitywatch.org. The GuideStar I alluded to earlier is another place to go, and it will show you their finances, and you'll say, you know, it'll be able to tell you if it's a qualified 501c3, and it will be able to tell you where their money has gone. You know, you can see if it's how much of their charitable giving actually goes to the organization. A lot of times in kind of shadier outfits, they may be a qualified nonprofit, but only 5 or 10 cents of every dollar given actually makes it to the intended use. And so that percentage, you know, it takes a lot of money and organization to run, especially larger charities. So it's not surprising that some of this would go to salaries and facilities, et cetera, because they're like basically small businesses. But on the other hand, you want to make sure that if you give money to an organization, that a good chunk of it eventually makes it to where you want it to go. And so that's another important question to ask. And then it's also fine to just say, hey, if I give you this money, where is it going to go? Where has it gone? And how will I know that you're actually going to give it to where you say you're going to give it to?
Well, some of those solicitation letters that my mom continues to get in the mail look pretty scammy to me. Like and not every organization is trying to fool you into believing that they're a nonprofit. Sometimes they, you know, there's just an assumption there, but some make it really look like, you know, Save the Donkeys LLC or whatever it is a, you know, is right. a real thing. Are there some tips for immediately looking for clues that this might be a fake?
Well, now I'm troubled. Are donkeys in danger? I'm concerned about that.
Apparently,
now.
My mom thinks so. So,
well, okay, good. I'm glad she's been giving to that cause. Yeah, they do look really good. And one of the things that, you know, there's some hallmarks is, especially if you're getting cold called about a charity, like, and it's often something that pulls on the heartstrings, like child cancer or firefighters or police officers or veterans. If you're getting cold call by them, just hang up, because that's a case of those people have generally who call people outside for donors have generally run into trouble. And even if the cause sounds good, hang up, Google them, go to their website and see if it's good. And another thing you mentioned about getting all those solicitations, I've had several clients who have told an organization, hey, here's the money I'm giving to you. And it's, you know, $5, it's $500, it's $5,000. The conditions of you getting this is that you take me off of your mailing list and that you don't sell my name to all the other charities as well, because a lot of people really want to give money, but what they don't want to do is be overwhelmed with solicitations again and again and again from all these different organizations who kind of pass the names of donors around with each other, or they can buy them via mailing list. And so that's a reasonable request to ask. The charity could say, sorry, we can't do that. And then the donor gets to say, well, then you don't get my money, and part ways. But that's a good way to make sure that you know, you're not getting overwhelmed with things, especially at this time of the year, mailings, et cetera.
Well, if we know we want to give, but we aren't sure who to give to, obviously there's places we can go to check if a charity is worthwhile, if they're reputable. But what do you recommend for finding effective charities? Let's say I want to save the donkeys. Where would I go to find some charities that align with that personal mission?
You can usually just Google charity and the cause of whatever you want, and it'll bring it up. But again, the charitynavigator.org and GuideStar and I think Donate Smarter is another one that it allows you to search by cause as well so that you can see which ones are important to you. And then some of those websites actually have a score where they'll say, based on our criteria for being an effective, well-run organization, we give these ones, you know, 3.5 stars or whatever. So then you can decide if, on that basis, if it's something you want to contribute to.
When you look up a charitable organization, and let's say you're looking at their tax filing, their 990, mm-hmm. What kinds of things should you be looking for? What kinds of things might be red flags that say, I don't know, this might not be for me?
Yeah, if a huge percentage of it is going to salaries and overhead, again, people who run charities are generally underpaid for the types of work that they do. They could probably make more money working in the private sector or even for a governmental organization, but for many reasons, they've chosen this road. So they're going to get paid, and they should get paid, and they should get benefits. It still is a case, though, to say if they say, well, this is our salaries, this is the money we brought in, et cetera. Another one is to say if they've been running a deficit, if they've been eating away into their investment capital, that shows that the charity, for better or for worse, it shows they really need your money. But on the other hand, it shows they may not be sustainable in the long term. So it might be something that you don't want to give a huge lump sum to right now because it might go more towards propping the charity up rather than for actually having the mission end where you'd like the money to go.
You mentioned you can tell a charity, hey, I'm going to give you the money, but don't send me any more stuff. Don't sell my name. But what about giving other kinds of restrictions? Can donors give restrictions on their donations and say, this is how I want you to use it?
Absolutely. They can set those in place. And especially if it's a larger dollar amount. And nonprofits and charities know this, that people say, well, I want it to go here, but I don't want it to go here. And again, the charity has the option of saying, well, we can't allow you to place those kinds of restrictions on this donation. And then you can say, then you're not getting my money. And that's a fair conversation to have. And it's always a good idea to ask and to tell the charity and say, where's this going to go? And is there some way that I can make sure it only goes to these particular parties or these groups or for this particular mission of your organization?
Well, we talk about individual donations, but what about small businesses? How can small businesses benefit from making charitable donations? Does that make a difference for them? Is there a benefit?
Absolutely. It's a really good idea for small businesses to remind people that not only they're there, they're still there, especially, you know, after the way that COVID and the economy has gone lately, but also to say not only are we still here, but we're still part of this community. And here's something that's valuable to us. We're donating something to this in the form of product or in terms of, you know, I love when a fast food restaurant says on Tuesday, we are giving 10% of all revenue to this particular organization, because it's a good way to say, you know what, that's good. We haven't been there a while. Let's go in there and buy a Butterburger or whatever and get some money to this organization. And then they can also, it's a good source of advertising for them because it's gentle. It's not pushing a product in people's face, but it's just reminding them that they believe in bigger things than just the bottom line. And they're willing to put their money, hopefully, where their proverbial mouth is.
What about nonprofit organizations giving to other nonprofit organizations? Does that make sense from a tax perspective?
It usually is there's some issues with doing that from a tax standpoint and maintaining it for it. It is when, you know, you have like a community foundation or you have a donor advised fund or you have a charity that says we're donating to this. But usually that's one of the reasons that you pay people who are running those larger organizations to decide where the money should go.
I want to ask you a little bit about record keeping. And if you're planning to use the deduction as a tax deduction, do you have to keep receipts for everything, even the small stuff?
It's a good idea to do it, because especially if you're donating something that has questionable, you know, if you're donating cash is cash, and you get the receipt for it. But you should keep records for it in case you ever get audited. And usually the problem does not come, you know, where the IRS is kicking down your door in the middle of the night asking to see the $5 you threw into a Salvation Army kettle at the supermarket. What they're looking to do is saying, look, you know, we've got information from this charity that they received this amount from you, but you declared a different amount on your tax record. So we're trying to match that up. So could you explain the difference for us? And it's very ominous when you get a notice like this from the IRS. But really all they're doing is just saying, hey, there's a miscommunication here. One of these numbers is wrong. Which one is it? Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's a good idea to have the records. People are very afraid of getting audited completely, and wildly more so than the likelihood of it happening. Usually for an average person, there's about maybe a 1 in 100 to 1 in 200 chance of getting an actual audit in a given year. And often, even when the IRS or the state revenue department contacts taxpayers, it's because of the discrepancy numbers between what they have in their system and what you reported on your taxes for it. But it's still a good idea to keep them. If you have a contribution of $250 or more, that requires a written receipt from the charity. And then if you donate property, that's when you also should keep the value, because they say, hey, no offense, you donated your old sofa you were going to throw away anyway. That wasn't worth $5,000 that you took on the deduction for it, so we're going to disallow it.
Okay, I see. The number to call with questions, 800-780-9742. We have an email from Mac in Dunn County who said, hello, it's good to hear your voice, Kevin. And he has a question. He's 72 years old in 2023. He has three traditional IRAs, and he plans to calculate each IRA's RMD, but take the withdrawal from a single IRA. He's going to be directing most of that withdrawal to various qualified charitable distributions. So both the RMD and the QCD amounts will look greater than the RMD for that single IRA. Are you following me?
I wasn't listening. Did you start over? No, I'm just kidding. I think I get what's going on.
Okay, he's just wondering if there's something he needs to do to make this as transparent possible to either the IRA custodians or the IRS.
Well, he needs to talk with each one of the organizations, and both at the start of the transaction and then also at the end of it, make sure that he has all of his receipts for it in hand for it. And again, and that's, this is one of those things too, again, that if you don't get the amounts properly documented, again, it's not a case where you're going to be hauled off to jail. It's just a case where the IRS is going to say, hey, you distributed X amount of dollars from this account. Why did this organization actually say that they received this amount? And that's where they'll call you on it. And again, it's not nefarious. It's just saying this doesn't match and why. But really helps reduce the any type of distribution from an IRA like that. And again, it's only available to people who are over 70 and a half, so Mac would definitely qualify. Anytime you do something like that, it means that it still goes through tax-free, but you can do it without having to itemize your deductions.
Okay. I'm glad you know the answer to that, because I get lost in the RMD, IRA, QCD. I get lost in those kinds of things. They're complicated to a lot of folks like me. So thank you for answering Mac's question. And it sounds like he just needs to reach out and make sure that everything is the way it needs to be. I want to talk a little bit about when cash donations are a stretch. Maybe I can't give money. I don't have stocks to give. What other ways do you recommend giving? What about donating goods, for example? Is that tax deductible too?
It can be. Usually, again, you have to be able to be using itemized deductions instead of the standard deduction so that you can get the break on it. But it's just a good way to help. And especially if you have old furniture or something that you don't know what to do with it, call many of these different, you know, whether it's some kind of Goodwill, or there's usually some kind of religious organization which will gladly come and get it, give you some kind of receipt for it. So if you do use it for tax, but just more importantly, you just get it out of the house, and you probably get it to somebody else who needs it more than you do, obviously. But there are a lot of other ways that you can help organizations without actually giving them cash. One thing is to, you know, if you have a Twitter account or Facebook even, and just say, hey, I just wanted to let people know that this is an organization that I care about. And if you are donating money this year and you're looking for different organizations, I would vouch for this one. And here's a link to the information on the organization and where you can donate. And that's something you can do via email. You can do it on Facebook, and you can do it via other kinds of social media accounts. And it doesn't take a lot of work to do that. And most people will just go, yeah, okay. But some people might go, oh, I never heard about that organization, and I'm obviously like this person who I'm in their network. I'm going to check them out, and that's a good way to do it. You can also, you know, there's always going to be a need for blood, especially for people with, you know, certain blood types that are rare. You can go donate blood for a while. You can call the organization up and say, hey, I can't give any money, but is there anything I can do to help? Can I come down and help you sort things or unload, or can I work at the food pantry or something? Those labor-intensive organizations always need volunteers. It's never a case where they said, sorry, we got too many people to help out there. They'll gladly come down. You can meet like-minded people, feel good about the way that you spent your time. And even if you say, I don't have an organization like that, you can go to a website called volunteermatch.org. It's volunteermatch.org. And you can look for both virtual and in-person volunteer opportunities in your community or worldwide that you can give your time and efforts to rather than your money.
If you give goods, let's say you drop off a box of coats at St. Vincent de Paul or a Goodwill or whatever it might be, they're always asking, do you want a receipt for that? Well, how do you calculate the value that can be used? is there a formula? I mean, that to me is hard.
There's not a formula. You should probably err on the side of caution, especially if you're going to deduct it. If you're not going to deduct it, it doesn't matter what you value added. It's good to have a receipt just in case, but no, you don't. If you're not going to deduct the value of the good, you don't need to worry about it. But if you are going to give it out, you want to have a receipt. Again, I've done this for 35 years as a financial advisor. We had, I think, On Your Money Show did 600 and some episodes over 15 years. I've written a column in magazines and newspapers for years. No one has ever contacted me and said, hey, I dropped a bunch of coats off at a charity. I deducted $200 or whatever for what I thought the value of the account was, and now I'm sitting in prison because the IRS disallowed the deduction. I've never even heard of it happening. So again, try to adhere to the law as well as you can. Make sure you kind of know in your mind, so you say, I have a rationale as to how I came up with this figure. And other than that, you should be good to go.
You're listening to Route 51 with Kevin McKinley, a discussion about making sound charitable giving decisions as the year comes to a close. When we return, we'll talk about what the stock market has to do with it and how to maximize giving even during difficult financial times. And Kevin will answer your questions when you call 800-780-9742 or email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome back to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward with Kevin McKinley, our guest today, as we continue our discussion on smart charitable giving. You can join in at email ideas@wpr.org, or you can join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. Kevin, I got to tell you, it's hard to take a look at stock investments without feeling a little sick to my stomach about the volatility of the stock market right now. We talked a little bit earlier about donating stock. Is that smart even in a down market?
Yeah, it is, as long as you have an inherent capital gain on it on which you do not wish to pay taxes. You know, there's often ways that people can reduce or eliminate capital gains taxes on capital gains. That's fairly easy to do in most cases, but not always. And sometimes people have been very fortunate. They bought, you know, Apple stock 20 years ago, and it's just it's down in price compared to its high from, let's just say, a year ago. but they still have a tremendous profit on it. And that's a really good way to get the entire amount to it without having to have a good portion of it locked off for taxes. And depending on your situation, it actually can be more tax beneficial to give an appreciated asset to a charity rather than to sell it, pay the taxes, and then try to donate the remaining dollar amount to the charity and take the break on that.
If you receive something in exchange for a donation, like let's say, okay, I donated $100. Now I got this ticket to see a show at a theater. Does that impact the amount you can claim?
Or, for example, you give to public radio and you get a tote bag.
Yes.
And back in.
Yes.
And for, have they ever done that? What happens is the charity is required to carve out the value of the item that you're giving in return for that. So they might, on your $100, they might say, well, tickets would normally be $20 each. So you don't get to deduct the $20 because that's the value that you received for giving this $100 for it. However, the $80 difference, you can still use that as part of your deduction.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clearing that up. Earlier, you mentioned the charity starts at home. Giving starts at home.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly for families with children, how do you suggest incorporating giving into everyday life and making this a lifelong habit?
We've worked with some of our families, both informally and formally, where we've had, especially if you have adult children and older parents say, hey, we want to give some money, but we're, you know, in our 60s, we're 70s, we're 80s. We're not quite up to speed on what needs are out there right now. It's a good family meeting thing to have and say, what organizations do you know about? Or everybody go out and research this yourself. And if we're going to give, let's just say it's $1,000 and there's five of us in the family, we're going to come back and meet again. And then each person's going to present their organization or person to whom they would like to give their $200 cut of this to. And it's a really great way to kind of begin a discussion with family members about money and about amounts and generosity and kind of where we stand both as a family or as people or where we stand in the community relative to this, because kids can be really great at finding that kind of emotional benevolence where they go, oh, gosh, we're so lucky, but this other kid in my class, she doesn't even have a backpack. And so I'd like to go buy a really nice backpack for this kid. And that's something that really triggers a good feeling in the kid, but it also helps generate the kind of feeling that they need to go forward as an adult and still feel like responsible members of the community who are helping other people and other groups out. So I think it's a really great way to do it, to say, hey, we've got some money to give away. Where do you think we should give it to? What do you support? Are you worried about the donkeys? Do you have school supplies or something that kids need? And get them talking about that. And it's we've had lots of families who that's kind of evolved into the notion of being custodians of wealth rather than owners of it, where, hey, we're all, you know, our time here on earth is limited. Yes, none of us are going to starve because we gave money away, but for the so-called extra money that we have, where will that go? And what's the most effective way for ourselves and our family to give that away?
And of course, as we get older, we start to think about what will happen when we're gone. And what if we want to ensure that the charities we support are included in our arrangements? Do you recommend a specific bequest or what's the best way to go here?
It's to contact the charity now while you're of relatively sound mind and body and say, what opportunities do you have in terms of making sure that you get whatever I had? And I really like this opportunity for people who say, you know what, I'm concerned I might need what I have. And it's just really hard for frugal people sometimes to give large amounts of money away. We were sitting down with some clients and their older mother a while ago, and she'd been very fortunate and inherited some money, invested the money, and she'd had, you know, literally several million dollars. And I said, you know, by the way, you have an opportunity to give money away, and there's some smart ways to do that. So if you ever want to donate, especially a significant amount of money, let me know because I'll tell you what's the smartest way to do that tax-wise. And she said, I've already donated a significant amount of money to the Sierra Fund. And I said, oh, okay. And the kid said, how much, Mom, did you give? And she said, just a minute. And she went back in and ruffled through her papers and everything. She said, I gave them $100 last year. And they said, yes, to a certain generation and mindset, even though they have several million dollars of net worth, the $100 was still significant to them. And so it's a good thing to talk about and say, let's set up beneficiaries on these accounts so they can go where we want them to go and relatively smoothly. And then the next step is to talk with an estate planning attorney and say, what tax advantages can I get from donating to these organizations upon my death? And how can I enhance my giving even by reducing the amount of taxes that I'm either spending now or later?
Kevin McKinley stays with us. There is time yet for you to call in with questions, 800-780-9742. We have an email from Jerry who is asking, is an RMD only deductible against your AGI, or can an RMD be used as part of your itemized charitable deductions? That is, if you're eligible to itemize.
It depends on the situation, and I hate to give out specific information like this because it can be, as you've alluded to earlier, it can be very complicated depending on the taxes and the timing and everything like that. But generally, if you have an RMD in your own account or an inherited account, you don't need the funds, you can donate it to the charity. The required withdrawal is still, though, going to be taxable income, and you can't do anything with that in terms of rolling it into other accounts.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Jerry. And we have David who sent an email as well. David said, I inherited a beneficiary IRA. I want to donate the entire amount to a charity. He's 70 and a half. He's getting conflicting information about whether he can do that and have it as a tax-free QCD.
Yeah, the money that you get from an inherited IRA, probably with limited knowledge of the specific situation, I'd say that the only way to do that is take the money out and have it be taxable income and then try to use that in a way that you can then donate it to them. But generally, if you can't use a decedent IRA to make qualified charitable donations, you can do it in some cases for it too, but I definitely be careful about doing that because it's one of those things that, you know, it's kind of too smart by half where people say, hey, I'm going to do this. This is also an IRA. I'm going to do this. But they're going to find out on the back end that that they did something in the process that kind of fouled up the possibility of taking a tax break on.
Ideas at WPR.org is our email address. You can email those questions to us or call us 800-780-9742 to get your questions answered. Kevin, should you donate less money to more charities or more money to fewer? What's the best way to approach that question?
Well, it feels good to give to different organizations. Again, you get on more mailing lists, so that's something to consider for it. And it's also something where you get more say in the money, the more money that you give. And so, yeah, I like it. You know, it's a good way to kind of click off $100 to each organization. It feels good. But then it's not going to mean as much to the charity when it's a smaller percentage of the overall money that they receive. So I think you should balance it more on these people. I feel like they're doing good. I feel like they are working really hard, and that's an effective way to give money. And so I'm going to focus it on this one group rather than spreading it out to 100 different ones and getting on 100 different mailing lists.
I read a Fidelity survey from this year that showed almost half of donors surveyed said they would contribute more if they could take an increased tax deduction. But the research also showed that most donors aren't even taking full advantage of the deductions that are already out there. So what do you think most people miss when it comes to those tax deductions for charitable giving? What's the common things that they fail to do?
Well, they don't realize that they'd be better off bunching their deductions in 1 year so that they can take the itemized deductions rather than the standard deduction. And you're better off doing your donating, like to a donor advice fund, even in 1 year, and then taking, you know, itemizing your deductions for tax purposes, and then not doing any donations in years 2, 3, or 4, or 5, and then maybe 5 years later, giving another big amount to your donor advised fund. And it, you bring up an interesting point with that survey, is people love the tax deduction. And I've seen more of this in the last probably 10 years or so with our clients, who, again, nobody likes paying taxes, but most of our people and most of the people listening get the reason taxes are part of a society.
That's sure.
You know, the plows are going to be out today in most parts of Wisconsin, and those are going to be paid for by taxes. But what I found recently is a lot of people who were who understood the role of taxes in society have said, you know what, I get that. However, I don't know when I send money to, you know, the state government or to the federal government or even the local government, it may or may not go where I want it to go. So if there's a way that I can reduce that money that I'm sending to my local or state or federal government and then give the rest directly to this organization, I'd really be interested in doing that. And we've seen that a lot more lately where people are just, you know, I'm paying more in taxes and it's going to places that I don't support. How can I reduce the tax amount and then send the difference directly to the charity?
What could lawmakers do to encourage more charitable giving? Is there a legislative action that would help here?
Absolutely. There's always things they can do in the form of the taxes, and especially there are a lot of states that are running surpluses right now. So on a state income tax basis, there's ways to do that. And then another thing that I'd like to see people think about is, you know, don't use just the tax break. Some of the my most enjoyable giving that we've ever done has been just to an individual that didn't qualify for a tax break. It's something where, you know, like I said, we bought school supplies. We paid off outstanding school lunch bills. We've gone to a mechanic and said, hey, do you have some nice people who have got a car sitting on your lot that's fixed, but they can't afford to pay the bill for it? And almost every mechanic has somebody like that. And they said, yeah, it's $380, but they just don't have the money for it, so we can't give them the car back. I said, here's the $380. And it was one of the most enjoyable experiences I've ever had. And I've had clients and other friends who've done things like they get gift cards at this time of the year. And if they just see somebody on site, they go, hey, here's a gift card. I hope you have a good day, et cetera. And it's really a nice way to help people out without worrying about the tax benefits and the documents and everything like that. You still help someone out directly, and you still get the good feeling from it. It's not quite as advantageous from a tax standpoint.
Well, donors want their donations to have an impact. And yeah, that feels really good. But when they give to an organization, they don't always learn what that impact is. You know, and especially given the deluge of requests, they're challenged by issues like which organizations are the most effective. What do you think nonprofits could do better to help encourage confidence among donors?
It's to know where the dollar is going and give them as many choices they can. Obviously, nonprofits have enough work to do and are overwhelmed as it is and underfunded even when money is given to them. So it's hard to say, okay, here's your $50. But to say, all right, for larger dollar amounts, let's say it's $10,000 or $100,000 for people who are well off, you can say, all right, if you give us $100,000, we promise that we are only going to give 5% of that every single year to the people who you want to go to or towards these means. And so that's something that people can discuss with the charity and just say, what are you going to do with this? And again, it's part of the reason why I like giving smaller amounts regularly rather than one lump sum, because then you have the opportunity to change your mind if a greater need comes up or you just feel like you can't afford to do it anymore.
Kevin, we have about a minute left in our time together, and I just want to reiterate again the names of those websites that you recommend for finding out more about the organizations you're giving to. By the way, we will list these after the program at WPR/Route 51. What are the main websites you'd like people to know?
CharityNavigator.org, VolunteerMatch.org. DonorsChoose.org is one where you can find opportunities in your community. Like sometimes teachers will put up on DonorsChoose.org that they need money for their classroom. And then GuideStar is another one that is a great way to research larger charitable organizations.
Is there one over another that you think is the easiest to navigate or the best one to recommend?
Probably Charity Navigator is the best one for searching out different larger organizations.
Well, Kevin, thank you so very much for all of this today. It's been great information, and I hope that everyone has found it helpful. I know I certainly did, and I wish you a very, very happy holiday season.
Thank you. Spend less, give more.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Siewert, once again thanking our guest, Kevin McKinley. Our producers today are Joy Ratchkramer and Kate Spranger. Joy is also our on-air producer today. Rick Ryer is our executive producer. You can hear the archive of each Route 51 program at WPR.org/Route 51 or on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks, too, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. If you have an idea for a future program or a question for our production team, be sure to email us ideas@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next week for another fascinating ride along Route 51. Until then, we're heading out of town.